Could free nationwide wireless web access be just a dream? Or a nightmare in disguise? Don't cancel your AOL account just yet. It's time for another Berkman Radio. A scheduled December 18th vote on a proposal for free nationwide wireless internet access was derailed late last Friday when politics got in the way. Many are seeing this as a missed opportunity to expand internet and telecommunications to rural areas and narrow the so-called digital divide. But many, including, oddly enough, technology advocates and fans of free internet, are celebrating the cancellation. David Weinberger speaks to Stephen Schultz of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society to find out why.
So we're going to talk about a new proposal from Kevin Martin, the chair of the Federal Communications Commission, that would set up a, well, I'll put it like this and then you can correct me, right? Get it right around the edges. But the sort of the marketing way of putting it is free Wi-Fi for everyone.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, let's go. So what's the proposal and what are the issues with it?
So the general proposal is to license a particular band of spectrum according to a new set of rules. Of course, anytime you want to access the internet wirelessly, you need to use a particular set of spectrum. Wi-Fi uses a set of spectrum. Your phone, when you access the internet over your phone, uses a different set of spectrum.
And the spectrum is frequency.
The spectrum is frequency, exactly. Radio frequencies. And the FCC controls those radio frequencies and what different people can do with those frequencies, as they have since the beginning of radio broadcast. For this particular band of spectrum, which is a relatively small amount, all things considered, 25 megahertz for those geeks listening, the commission, through Kevin Martin primarily, is proposing that they do an auction, which is the FCC's normal way of allocating spectrum these days. But they put some special conditions on that auction, saying that whoever wins the auction has to offer one tier of wireless internet access for free, essentially using a quarter of that spectrum. And for the other three quarters, they can have a charged a service where they charge you a fee for access to the internet. And the idea is that over that quarter of the spectrum where they're giving sort of slower internet speeds, essentially DSL speeds, that the company would probably support that through ads. So you aren't essentially paying with your money, you're paying with your eyeballs or your attention to advertisements. And it looks likely that they will approve this general approach within the next couple of weeks. Kevin Martin is the current chairman of the FCC, and he has made it clear that this is one thing that he would like to see move forward before he leaves in a couple of months.
So there's one important condition applied to whoever wins, whatever private company wins the auction to provide us with a national Wi-Fi service. And what is that condition?
So the condition as it's been proposed is that anyone who is accessing the internet using this free service, the free tier of service, will receive filtered broadband internet access. And the language in the FCC proposal is that the service provider must restrict any content that would be inappropriate to minors, essentially. So this is colloquially referred to as the porn-free internet.
As opposed to the free porn internet, which is the 75%
of right, the which might, sector, in fact, be more profitable on the advertising model.
So what constitutes suitable for minors?
Well, that's a very good question. And we don't have a clear answer to that, both sort of as something you and I could define in English, let alone what we could define using the language of computers, internet code.
Is there any age specification in the FCC discussion of this?
So a minor, according to the text of the rule, is teens and adolescents. They define it as teens and adolescents are children 5 through 17 years of age. So if 18 years of age is appropriate, under 5, I'm not sure exactly what happens.
So it sounds like this would have to be an internet that's safe for 5-year-olds.
That's correct, exactly.
That cuts out a lot of stuff.
That does cut out an awful lot of stuff, and it depends on which five-year-old you're using as a benchmark. Are you using a five-year-old with especially liberal East Coast parents, or are you using a conservative five-year-old or a five-year-old of a particular religious or persuasion?
So it would be very easy now to come up with the outrageous examples of things that presumably would not be allowed, including much of the world's literature, which contains swear words and,
that's right,
and sexual scenes and all the rest of it. The real question is who decides how this internet is going to be filtered?
Who decides is ultimately the provider. The FCC gives them a very general rule saying you must block inappropriate content, but ultimately the company, this private entity that is providing the service, has to make a call across the board. And they have particular incentives to decide one way or the other. If they, for example, allow something through that the FCC doesn't approve of, that can be very dangerous to their license and dangerous to their business model. If, on the other hand, they block something that some people would disagree with, they might get some level of user frustration in a few cases. But in general, those aren't their paying customers anyway. Those are the free users.
So would you do this, if you were the company, would you do this as a blacklist or a whitelist? That is, would you try to filter out the stuff that you think might offend some portion of the five-year-old population? Or would you instead limit yourself to some list you compile of safe sites?
Well, the language in the FCC proposed rules seems to indicate that you would have to do it as a whitelist, essentially saying these are the things we know are good, so we'll let them through.
That's indistinguishable from a portal. I mean, that's what a site that says, oh, come see our premium, wonderful content. You'll like it. You'll enjoy it. Here's our little garden. We guarantee that this stuff is at least child safe. We're not being offered access to the internet. We're being offered access to a privately constructed internet portal.
Taken to their logical end, that's what the FCC rules say. And they say, in fact, that you are not permitted to allow access to those protocols which you cannot decipher, or the content which you can't identify, such as peer-to-peer file sharing or perhaps voice over internet protocol traffics, or
because people might make dirty phone calls.
People might make dirty phone calls or say something inappropriate. It's, in fact, it's hard to come up with all of the hypotheticals because there are, of course, new technologies coming out every day, and the rules assume somewhat naively, perhaps, that this provider could keep up with every new use of the internet and find a way to approve or disapprove of each piece of content that passes. In fact, it's fairly confusing what they would be required to do when it comes to encrypted content, which is how all of us do e-commerce online every day, because they wouldn't be able to read that at all. They wouldn't be able to recognize any of that content and filter it. It's unclear from the rules what the effects would be on what those providers would have to do. Would they have to block all e-commerce altogether?
So there are some practical issues around this. There's a great deal of unclarity that presumably will be worked out in some combination of, I guess, citizen or market response and FCC rulings.
Right.
And maybe some court cases as well. Do you see implications for, say, civil liberties?
Well, absolutely. In fact, one of the key commenters on the docket, essentially the way that FCC rulemakings work, they put out proposed rules and then various people comment on the docket. And there have been various civil liberties groups that have commented saying that essentially this creates a new gatekeeper choosing what speech may and may not be permitted online. And what's more troubling in this case, in a sense, is that the gatekeeping responsibility is being mandated by the government, but it's being delegated to a private entity. And whereas you may have traditional recourse against the government if it's trying to restrict your speech under traditional First Amendment claims, the idea that this responsibility is delegated to a private entity is more disturbing because you don't necessarily have those same ways of pushing back or that same level of accountability or the same amount of transparency around what's happening. So that is indeed troubling, and it's unlike many other situations that we've seen in the past.
So there's talk now that the FCC may be proposing that adults would be allowed to opt out of the censorship on the 25% of the spectrum allocated for free Wi-Fi. There are issues with that, too.
That's right. Now, we should be clear that these are rumors. The currently proposed rules don't include anything about this. There have been some reports in the press saying essentially that Kevin Martin is interested in compromising and allowing adults to verify their identity and then opt out of the content filtering. Now, this as you mentioned, this raises a host of questions. How do you have adults identify themselves? Are adults likely to want to self-identify as those that would like access to the internet with porn? Does this really satisfy the free speech concerns? That sort of thing. There's a wealth of research and literature on how difficult it is to truly identify and age verify who is who online. The most common method is to use a credit card, which is highly problematic for a variety of reasons.
Would mean that to get the free speech portion of the internet, you would have to be a credit card holding person.
That's correct.
And that's just one of the problems, and there are ID issues as well.
That is correct, yes. And so this the notion that there is a sort of ubiquitous free internet access that anyone can connect to without any hurdles begins to be chipped away as we introduce these other requirements, trying to keep this gate around access to content.
So I should maybe mention that while the Berkman Center as an academic research institute has absolutely no position on this, you and I as individual fellows, it turns out we both signed comments to the FCC. You're allowed to file
That's
comments,
right.
Which make three arguments about this. Can you?
Sure. Sure. The three basic arguments in this comment to the FCC, which we signed along with quite a few other people, say essentially that the market works best, the marketplace works best when you have access to an unfiltered internet. So it's best for business. It also makes the point that the First Amendment and traditional free speech requirements would bar the type of content discrimination that the FCC is proposing. And we mentioned previous cases like the fundamental Reno versus ACLU case. And the third point it makes is that in general, this type of approach in which the commission puts these highly content restrictive requirements on use of spectrum conflicts fundamentally with some stated commission principles around users' right to access information and to express themselves using these public airwaves.
This is very interesting. This is an attempt to do something that many of us would like, which is to get a lot more Wi-Fi reaching into a lot more places. But it raises all sorts of really interesting questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Stephen Schultz is a fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. You can find him on the, as yet uncensored, internet at managingmiracles.blogspot.com. One quick update. As of Friday, December 12th, the FCC has indefinitely canceled the vote on Kevin Martin's controversial proposal under pressure from a rare group of allied interests. The Bush administration took the free market position, saying that, quote, the draft would constrain a provider's usage of this spectrum, favoring a particular business model and potentially precluding the spectrum from allocation to the most valuable use. Meanwhile, Democratic Congressman Jay Rockefeller and Henry Waxman suggested that the vote would be counterproductive, considering it would be reviewed and possibly rejected by the incoming Obama administration. We followed up with Stephen Schultz, who had this to say.
So in a way, this the falling apart of this proposal is a good thing, because there were some real questions, especially around the filtering and the First Amendment questions, that would have inevitably brought us into court to litigate over these issues. On the other hand, we have this spectrum out there which could be used and could be serving the public and could potentially be getting free or low-cost internet access out to American citizens. And we desperately need that. My hope is that in the new FCC and under the new administration, we can get a clear vision for where we might want to go and get consensus around it so we can start using this valuable public resource that we all share.
And that's it. We'll be back next week. This episode of Berkman Radio was produced by Daniel Jones at the Berkman Center for Internet Society at Harvard University.